this is what I shall speak about in the second and just in the third lecture. So lecture two, this will be some ideas from the proof, which I consider just beautiful and nice. And lecture three, this will be about inviscid limit when just viscosity goes to zero. Actually, so something really interesting happens here, because these results, they were more or less unknown to physicists, and they expected there something different. They expected for this limit, this is particularly tomorrow, for this limit they expected something which should look like Krashnan theory, but what I have, this is something which has nothing in common with Krashnan theory of 2D turbulence. But these are proven theorems, so, but it will be tomorrow. Yes, and also I shall try to find time, maybe just to do it, maybe tomorrow, just to tell on some results, because yesterday there were questions, what happened if random force has only a few most excited, say 9. We have some results. I hope that we shall finish this problem by the end of this year, but now this is, okay, now we have some positive results, but so I hope to find time tomorrow. So this is the main object is the same. This is randomly perturbed Navier-Stokes equation, and I took care just to copy it on the blackboard. And for the purposes of the lecture of today, I have picked up Navier-Stokes equation perturbed by the kick forces, although all results which I shall speak about and all techniques and all ideas apply also for the white forced equation. There are some technical difficulties for white forced equation, but they are on the level technique and not on the level ideas. Ideas are the same. Okay, so then just this is Navier-Stokes equation written down using the Leray projector, and I repeat that just as before, I take this dynamical system point of view, so I view solution of this equation as a curve in a functional space H, and for me, functional space H for today will be just L2 space. Yesterday it was sometimes L2 space, sometimes it was space of continuous function state. It will be L2, it is slightly easier for my purposes. And the right-hand side is a kick force. And the kick force is a chain of random kicks, yes. And for the lecture, for just to simplify everything, I took a period between kicks, T capital equal to 1, just to remove one extra variable. So this is my force. And in this formula, eta j is the kick number j. And the kicks which I have here are independent, identically distributed random variables in my phase space H. And the kick number J has the following form. If I decompose it in Fourier series, then the Fourier coefficient number S is, as before, is a product of two objects. First, this is a scalar constant which represents intensity of the Fourier coefficient number S. And second is a factor of order 1, which is just a random variable of order 1. And this random variable depends on two parameters, S and J. And from different S and J, these are independent random variables. And so their distributions should be independent of J, where J is the number of the step. And perfect model, which we should keep in mind. This is the case when the random variable Xi, Xi, Sj, all of them are uniformly distributed on the segment minus 1, 1. This is the most important example. There are some, okay, in general, we have to impose some restrictions on this random variables, but they're really weak, so this is really honest example. Okay, if so, then just as before, as on my previous lecture, I shall study my equation only at integer values of time, because now period between kick equals to 1, so and this kick comes at the integer values of time, and I study my solution only at the integer values of time. And then solution at time equal to n can be obtained in the following way. I have to take solution evaluated at time equal to n minus 1. I have applied to this solution the map S, which is a time one shift for the along trajectories of the free Navier-Stokes equation, and I have to add kick number n. Yes, and so this is in this way, Navier-Stokes equation, which is upstairs Navier-Stokes equation 1, becomes a discrete time random dynamical system, which is governed by the map S, where the map S is a time one shift along trajectories of of the Navier-Stokes equation. What we have, in fact, is a very general theorem, very general theory, which applies to a lot of dynamical system of this form, and it is not really that important for us that S is time one shift along trajectory for Navier-Stokes. So actually, for lecture of today, everything what I shall speak about today is really very general stuff. It applies for many other nonlinear partial differential equations. In difference, what I shall speak about tomorrow really uses specific of 2D Navier-Stokes, and this will be something which is really about 2D hydrodynamics. Okay, so and just notation which I shall take for the rest of this lecture is that in this way, I shall denote trajectory of the dynamical system 1, which at time t equal to 0 equals to u naught. And usually u0 will be a constant, will be a vector from H, but from time to time u0 will be a random variable. I shall specify this. And of course then un of u0, this is a random trajectory, which is also depends on the random parameter, but dependence on the random parameter will be usually suppressed. Okay, and then in obvious way the random dynamical system 1 defines a Markov chain in the space H. And this Markov chain is the following. The corresponding transition probability, which is a probability which corresponds to starting point u0 and the time L, is nothing but the distribution of solution, such that for this solution initial condition is u0, and we relate distribution at time t equals to L. And so this is classical fact that random dynamical system defines a Markov chain. So in fact these are three incarnations of randomly perturbed Navier-Stokes equation. First one we have there upstairs on the blackboard. This is randomly perturbed partial differential equation. What I have here in one, this is the same equation can be interpreted as a random dynamical system. And here this is another remark, that the same object defines a Markov chain in the space H, and it also can be studied as Markov chain. And in fact, when we study this object, and to study this object, we actually use all three representations of the problem. So we use techniques of partial differential equations, techniques of random dynamical system, and techniques of Markov chains. And just some of them I shall present today. Okay, since I have a Markov chain, then the Markov chain defines two famous semigroups. First of them, which is the most basic, is the semigroup in the space of bounded continuous functions. B stands for bounded on the phase space H. Second is a semigroup which just acts in the space of probability Borel measures on H. And actually, I shall never use the first semigroup. I shall use only the second one. So just let me remind you how the Markov chain as above define a semigroup in measures. There are just many ways to explain this. For me, the best way and the best for the purposes of this lecture is the following. In order to apply the map Pn star to a given measure mu, I have to do the following. First, I have to find any random variable u0 such that distribution of this random variable equals to measure mu. Second, I have to find solution of my equation which equals to this random variable u0 at t equal to 0, and I have to evaluate this solution at t equal n. I have to calculate distribution, and this measure is the image of the measure mu under the map Pn. There are a lot of equivalent definitions, and there is a lemma hidden here. And the lemma is that this definition is independent of the random variable u0, but depends only on the measure mu. And another lemma is that this map really extends to a linear map in the linear space of signed measures. But all this is true, and this is well known. This can be found everywhere. So this was introduction, and now the first section of my talk. This is around theorem 1. And the theorem 1 is repeated on the right blackboard. And this is okay. So this is the same theorem as today. So if sufficiently many coefficients BS are non-zero, but actually exactly in this framework, this assumption can be removed. So we can remove it now, but this is not what I wish to do in this my talk. If this happens, then there exists unique stationary measure. This measure is stationary, means that the map from the semigroup they does not change the measure. And just moreover, if I take any solution for my random dynamical system one, which is this one on the blackboard, yes, then the solution in the distribution converges to this measure when n goes to infinity. In fact, this convergence also holds true if the initial data is not a constant, is not a fixed vector, but just a random variable in H. The only assumption which we need is the following, that the second moment is finite. Actually, this convergence is exponentially fast, but the fact that it is exponentially fast seems to be absolutely of no practical importance. Convergence is important. The fact that it is exponentially fast seems to be non-important. The main reason is that exponent of the exponential convergence seems to be completely out of our control at this stage. So then it doesn't mean much. So Walter, this depends. What does it mean mixing? So let us just avoid it. So in many people call exactly this convergence exponential mixing. But then so there are many definitions of mixing. So Volta. Okay, so then just the point is that when we're speaking about exponentially fast mixing, then we usually mean something like this. Let me really tell you something. So then just what is exponentially fast mixing? Exponentially fast mixing means the following. I take f of u n. This is my solution. This I take any functional f of u n. I evaluate mathematical expectation. And this must converge to f mu. This is the statement of our theorem, and also this is, and if convergence is exponentially fast, this is exponential mixing. Why I said that our statement is not exponential mixing? The real point here is that for which classes of functions this can be proven. In definition of classical Kolmogorov definition of exponential mixing, which you will find in 95% of book, this must be hold true for any measurable bounded function. And we absolutely have no chances to prove this. We can prove this convergence for Lipschitz function. Therefore, we have mixing in some weaker sense. Therefore, we need we are forced to use much more subtle theorem. So therefore, for example, Armen proved actually a new version from central limit theorem, something like this. So we have exponential mixing, but for a smaller class of functions. Okay. So, and then I shall give some words about the proof, and I shall follow first my paper with Armen Cherikyan, and most of my results, which I refer to the first and the second lecture, they are obtained jointly with Armen, who was my postdoc in Heriot-Watt, and who is now in France in RC. And I think this may be the best presentation of this proof, because this is the last one. This is our last try. This is my paper, which is on publication of American Mathematical Society, which is called Mark Wishek Seminar on Partial Differential Equations. It can be downloaded from my webpage. And here's the proof of the theorem is something like 8 pages only, but it's a clever 8 pages. And independently, slightly later, very similar proof was developed by Nazir Masmoudi and Elyson Yan. Okay, so I wish to tell you about some ingredients of the proof, which we found nice, and some of them we just discovered ourselves. So this usual bicycle principle: every bicycle has to be invented much more than once. So the first ingredient, this is a Kantorovich distance in the space of measures. So P stands for the set of probability Borel measures on H. Let us consider the following object K. K is the set of all Lipschitz functions in H, such that these functions are bounded by 1 and Lipschitz constant are bounded by 1. Of course, K is nothing but ball of radius 1 in the space of all Lipschitz functions on H. Now let us take any two measures, mu 1, mu 2. Let us define distance between these two measures like this. If you will look at this definition, you will see this is exactly. I take space dual to the space of Lipschitz function. I take the canonical distance, dual distance, and I use this dual distance to to measure distance between two measures. So this is, I shall refer to this distance either as Kantorowicz distance or to Lipschitz dual distance. Here L stands for Lipschitz, so this notation is Lipschitz dual. Then one remarkable result of Kantorowicz is the following. That the space of probability Borel measures of H, equipped with the distance 3, becomes a complete metric space. The convergence with respect to this distance is the weak convergence of measures. So this is extremely nice and extremely effective result. So it makes Kantorowicz distance extremely effective tool to study all related equations. There will be another reason why it is so. It will be maybe I should say that Leonid Kantorowicz is remarkable Soviet applied mathematician who was with strong interest in just mathematical economy. So he was given Nobel Prize in economics in the early 70s. So it was not him, it was him and not Nash who was the first brilliant mathematician who got Nobel Prize in economics. For example, in late 30s, he just discovered linear programming. Since it was about 39, of course, it was classified and it was rediscovered later. But his Nobel Prize, it was recognition of the fact of his enormous contribution to economics. Yes. Also, he was a scientist of just remarkable personality. Okay. So let us move forward. So let us abbreviate in this way mu of n distribution of solution which starts from u zero and I evaluate this solution at time n. Then of course when I take n equal to zero, that then the measure mu zero is just delta measure concentrated at u naught. And then just, of course, and this immediately follows from my definition, that the measure mu n, this is nothing but the map of the semigroup in measures, the map P1 star applied to the measure n minus 1, and this is the same as the map Pn star applied to the original, to the initial measure, which is delta measure at the point u naught. And we have to prove, and to prove the convergence too, means exactly that we have to prove that there exists a measure mu such that the distance between measure mu n to the measure mu converges to zero when n goes to infinity. There is a very nice and very simple lemma which everybody can prove himself, just maybe in my average estimate is just 15 minutes. To prove convergence for, it is sufficient to prove the following result. That if I take any two solutions for my equation, with corresponding to initial data u1 and u2, and if I evaluate corresponding measures at time n, and if I evaluate distance between them, that for any two initial data, this distance converges to zero as n goes to infinity. It is clear that this convergence implies this one, right? Because it's just a triangle inequality, but also other way around. So this is simple lemma, very useful, and this is exactly how just practically everybody proves that okay, so this is one of the most popular way to prove convergence too. So this is what people check. That when we start to evolve when we consider any two solutions starting from any two deterministic initial data u0, u2, then when we evaluate their distribution, that the corresponding distributions should converge to zero when n goes to infinity. This is what we have to check. Then how to check? And here comes another remarkable technical discovery, also due to Kantorowicz, although it is not in this my reference. Kantorowicz invented, and this object is called coupling. Kantorowicz invented this technical tool just to study famous mass transfer problem, which just many people are fond of now. And okay, so he did it in applied mathematics and in Leningrad rather than in pure mathematics in Moscow. So it was rediscovered in Moscow later on, and this is, and in the West it is more known as Wasserstein distance. But this is due to Kantorowicz. There is a famous book in Russian, Kantorowicz and Akilov function analysis, which is textbook like this, and there it is presented in imperfect way. Okay. So what this object is about? Definition. A coupling. Let us take for two measures mu1, mu2. Then the coupling for the measures mu1, mu2 is the pair of random variables u1, u2. And these random variables are valid in H because mu1, mu2 are measures on H. These measures are defined on some probability space. This probability space did not exist before. Before, I have only measures in the space in on the space H. But now I say that now I found somewhere, just I don't know where, new probability space. On this probability space, I constructed two random variables, U1, U2. And these random variables are such that distribution of random variable U1 is measure U1, distribution of random variable U2 is measure U2. If this happened, then the pair U1, U2 is called coupling for the measure U1, U2. I repeat that this probability space, this is just something absolutely new, so it can be any probability space at all. It was not here before. Well, just intuitively, okay, so why the notion of coupling is so important? Because how can we prove that the measures U1 and U2 are closed? So there are absolutely no intuition which will help us to prove that any two the measures are closed. So it's very, very hard to understand what had to check to prove that the measures are closed. On the language of coupling, situation becomes different. To prove that the measures U1 and U2 are closed, this is the same as to find good coupling U1 U2 for the measures U1 and U2, such that the random variables U1 U2 are close almost everywhere. So this is the real importance of the notion of coupling, is exactly this one. That it is much easier to check that two random variables are close than to check that two measures are close. Why? Because it is much easier to use our intuition, because our intuition helps us, at least me. So maybe people who have background of in pure probability, they have different intuition. Okay, but this is measures. Yes. So it is easier to check that functions are closed than to check that measures are closed. Because how can we check that measures are closed? If we have to take test function, integrate test function against measures, it's very, very, very messy. And well, it depends. This is our world. So this is really art. This is really an art to construct right coupling. And part of this art is to find right probability space. And I shall show you something in just a couple of words. And just let us make another abbreviation. So we have two initial data, U1, U2, and we evolve two measures starting from these two initial data. One of them will be called measure mu of n sub index 1, and another will be abbreviated as the measure mu of n sub index 2. Then what we have to check? We have to check that for any U1 and U2, Kantorovich distance between these two measures goes to 0 as n goes to infinity. Now the whole idea and the whole point why this proof, the whole idea behind the proof is a special coupling for the measures mu1, mu2. Okay, so the whole point is that you have to construct good coupling for these measures mu1, mu2. And this coupling is being constructed by induction. So let us assume that we have a good coupling, Vn, Wn, for the measures mu1 of n, mu2 of n. So then this is a definition of coupling, right? So distribution of these random variables give me this measure, distribution of these random variables give me that measure. Now that comes another important remark. Since in my dynamical system 1, which is up there, kicks eta 1, eta 2, eta 3 are independent, then we may assume that the kick number n depends on the random point omega n from the probability space number n. So here comes one of nice technical ideas. So if we have independent random variables, then up to some equivalence, which I really skip there, and I don't explain, but this is honest equivalence. We can assume that independent random variables are just independent, are defined on different probability space. Because they're really independent, so anyone knows nothing about another one. Okay? So then in this case, omega 1, omega 2, these are just different probability space. This is a different probability space. And also, it is fair. We can, this is almost definition, but, or maybe we can assume that this is a part of our induction state, and induction in part of our induction step. That we can assume that the coupling number n is defined on some other probability space omega. Okay, so now look. At the step n, for the measures mu1 n, mu2 n, we have nice coupling. Now, first what we shall do, we shall construct some coupling for the measures mu1 n plus 1 and for the measures mu1 n plus 2. Then now look what happens. What is the measure mu1 n plus 1? This is the map p1 star, which is which is the map from our single group of measures, apply to the measure mu1 number n. But in my definition of this map definition, if you follow the definition for the map for this map which I gave, then to apply this map to this measure, we have to do the following. Well, we have to take a random variable Vn such that distribution of this random variable Vn equals to this measure. But this is exactly the random variable Vn from the previous coupling. We have to apply our random map to this random variable, and we have to evaluate distribution of this new random variable. And then distribution of this random variable, this is measure n plus 1. Quite similar. Measure n plus 1 sub index 2, this is a distribution of this random variable. But now look what happens. What I have here, this is a random variable, which depends on all parameter omega and all parameter omega n plus 1. What I have here is a random variable which depends on all parameter omega and on the new parameter omega n plus 1. And essentially by definition, these two new random variables, which are in green, V naught n plus 1, W naught n plus 2, they are random variables defined on this probability space, omega from here, omega n plus 1 from here, and this is by definition a coupling for the measures mu1 n plus 1 for the and the measure mu2 n plus 1. So what we have is a coupling. So we started with a coupling for the measures number n, and we arrived at the coupling for the measures number n plus 1. Unfortunately, this coupling is not good enough. And then here comes lemma that with some effort, this coupling can be improved. And this is the main lemma. The main lemma tells us the following, that the trivial coupling which I obtained in this way can be replaced by a better coupling. And this is by a better coupling, and this coupling is formed by the random variables Vn plus 1, Wn plus 1, which is defined on the same probability space, omega times omega n plus 1, with the following property. Let us denote by Dn distance between random variables Vn and Wn. Then there exists absolute constant Cn, which is just absolute constant, which depends only on our problem, such that the following remarkable property holds. Let us fix any parameter omega, which is the parameter which is defined coupling from the previous step. Then when omega is fixed, we can evaluate probability with respect to the second random parameter. And then the following remarkable inequality holds. That the probability with respect to this additional parameter of the fact that the distance between these new couplings is bigger than half of the distance Dn is bounded by the constant time distance. So look what does it mean. This is really very nice relation. Why this relation is very nice? Because look, let us consider the case that when the distance was small. Then C times distance is a small number. Yes? Then what really happens? That with probability close to one, the distance between new random variables, between random variables which define new coupling, is twice shorter than the distance between old random variable. So this is essentially how the mechanism of coupling works. So just let me tell you the same once again. So with high probability, the random variables Vn plus 1 and Wn plus 1 are twice closer than the random variables Vn and Wn, provided that Vn and Wn are close enough. And then this statement, this lemma, goes well with this intuition why we need coupling, which I started this section with. That coupling tells us that to prove that the measures are close, we have to construct coupling for these measures which are pointwise close random variables. In some way, it is pretty clear that just in this way we shall construct we shall construct couplings which are just more and more close, which are essentially convergent one to another, because with high probability new random variables are twice closer than the old one. Of course it means exponential convergence. Yes. Then there are two claims. Sure. Absolutely, yes. This is the middle of the proof, yes. Heart of the proof, yes. This is mixed world. I would say it's functional analysis. It is measure theory in functional spaces with... Well, this follows from the proof. So this is... This lemma, actually, this is it's a page, so... I cannot. So this is it's a page. So if you are curious enough and if you will open the paper, you will really understand this. But this is this statement which okay. So this is this typical example of statement which is rather easy to read, but it is almost impossible explain on the blackboard. One of this. But this is only page. So this and page without any tricks. It is possible explain this page, but this is page which will take 1 hour of lecture time. So it's easy to read. But this is really, so this, I really wish to show you this heart of the matter. This, even this claim that the main lemma implies theorem sounds very plausible. But to push it to the end and indeed to show that the main lemma implies the theorem, actually the best way to do it was to use the third technical invention of Kantorovich, which is called technique of Kantorovich functional. So indeed, so this is all this proof is very much inspired by Kantorovich ideology. And actually, okay, so in fact, okay, so no matter. And also, by the way, also apart from Kantorovich, there is another parallel to this logic, and this is how Roland Dobrushin in his last papers proved that 1D systems, that the 1D Gibbs system is unique. So this is the same kind of logic, but this I have no chances and no time to explain. So coupling. This is how coupling works. But this is really the main. So this is the heart of the matter, and this is center of the gravity. So this is the middle. But I repeat that. So these 8 pages. So this really readable now. It's readable. Okay. So these are few remarks about the proof which I just wish to make. Now let me switch to ergodicity. So this is this more or less so often when people give a talk on this subject that their title is something like ergodicity in Navier-Stokes. So but up to now there were just no ergodicity there. It was convergence too. Why this ergodicity? Well, just let me, this is what I wish to talk about next, because as soon as we understand how ergodicity is related to group of results, then we immediately are in position to use an ergodic theory, which is extremely powerful tool. And this is what I wish to show you, how this stuff is related to what is the role of ergodicity here. Okay, so this is the dynamical system one. Then let mu be a stationary measure. Then it is almost definition of the stationary measure, not quite, but just almost. Then since mu is a stationary measure, then there exists a stationary process un, which satisfies equation 1 first, and second, that if we evaluate the distribution of this process at any time t, then this measure equals to mu. Actually, this is a definition of stationary measure which I gave on my previous lecture. And yes, this is true. So for a stationary measure mu, such a stationary process exists. Again, what is hidden here is some equivalence. I just skip. I don't explain which kind of equivalence I am using here. But this is not really relevant. Just believe me. Let us denote as usual in this class of problems. Let us denote by just H to Z space of infinite trajectories in the space H. Space of infinite trajectories in the space H. Then, of course, for any value of a random parameter, this u gives me a trajectory which is an element in the space h sub index z, right? So if so, then I can view u capital, as random variable values in this space of awful sequences. Yes? Since I have a random variable, then I can evaluate distribution of this random variable. And distribution of this random variable is a measure M, and this is a measure in this space of sequences. So this is absolutely classical construction from the ergodic theory. Also in the space of sequences, there is a famous one-shift map, which is just in the lies in the foundation of the ergodic theory. So this is in the book of Halmash, just in lot of papers of Kolmogorov, so it was about this map. And then comes, then of course the measure M is just invariant under the shift map theta. This happens because the process U is a stationary process. So almost definition, this is essential definition of stationary process, then distribution of stationary process is invariant under the shift map. And here comes this fundamental definition. They just by definition, stationary measure mu is called ergodic if this map theta and the measure M is an ergodic dynamical system. This is here should be not process but just dynamical system, right? So we start with a random dynamical system. Starting with random dynamical system, we constructed new phase space H, which is a space of sequences. On this space of sequences, we constructed map measure M, which is so to say derivative from the which was derived from the measure mu. On this space of sequences, we have this map theta, which is time one shift map. And by definition, the measure mu is ergodic if this time shift map theta and the map M give us an ergodic process. And then there is, it is known, and it is not difficult, it is not, by the way, also trivial, that if a stationary measure is unique, then the stationary measure is ergodic. This is known result, and this is really a very good reference just to find this result. This is the book of Doprata Zabchik, ergodicity for infinite dimensional dynamical system, Cambridge University Press. So if you have unique stationary measure, then the stationary measure is ergodic. It means that we, in some absolutely new phase space, in the space of trajectories, we construct time one shift map, we construct new measure, and this map with respect to this new measure is ergodic. So then indeed, there is some link between our random dynamical system 1 and the corresponding unique stationary measure mu and some ergodic dynamical system. Therefore, we can try to use ergodic theory just to get some results which are useful for us. And maybe the most striking example, because it's useful first, and we shall get it essentially for nothing, not just using one of classical results. This is leading Lyapunov exponent. Okay, so now I shall show you, because look, so we have for the dynamical system one, we have trajectories. These trajectories depend on the random parameter. As soon as we have infinite trajectories, then of course it's very useful, it's a right idea, just to calculate Lyapunov exponent of this trajectory and try to estimate it from below and from above and to prove that Lyapunov exponent exists. Значит, let us do this. Okay, so let us pick up any random trajectory for my dynamical system one. This random trajectory defines the linearized map in just n steps. And please look here for a couple of seconds, and you will indeed see that this is a linearization for the flow map along this dynamical system due to time not n, n plus one. This is phi, Greek phi, phi capital. Yes, all Russians like Greek letters. Well, just it's quite well. Yes, well, maybe you're right. Maybe this is Russian F than Greek phi. Yes. Maybe you're right. Okay, so look, so this is a linearization of the dynamical system one along the trajectory um. But now let us remember that we have this bigger dynamical system in the bigger space. And this map can be perfectly represented in terms of bigger dynamical system theta. Let us do this. In terms of dynamical system theta capital, which is a shift map, we can represent this map phi in the following way. Let us define the following random dynamical system. What I'm doing? I'm taking any sequence theta. So this is element of the space of sequences, random element, right? And I evaluate the sequence in t equal to zero. And I applied linearized ds to this, and applied linearized, and I evaluate linearization of the map s at this point. And then this is a random matrix, in fact, this is a random map. Then this is absolutely straightforward, this is essentially obvious. Then this can be just written like this. Then this can be written like this. This can be written like this. Yes. And then just everybody who has just minimal experience with this stuff, of course, immediately sees that what we got, this is a multiplicative cocycle. This is what is called in this language and ergodic theory, multiplicative cocycle. Multiplicative cocycle. Okay, so then just now define leading Lyapunov exponent in the usual way. Let us define leading Lyapunov exponent as this limit. So this is just Lyapunov exponent, nothing else. Then now look, since the dynamical system theta is ergodic, then this representation for the map phi, which we have here, allows us to apply Kingman subadditive ergodic theory. This is just because we need the, on this is one of great ergodic theorem. And just absolutely straightforward application of subadditive ergodic theorem implies that for mu almost all initial data you know, the limit which is leading Lyapunov exponent exists almost surely. And this limit is a deterministic constant independent of u naught, right? So we have, so just what happened here? So we have here Navier-Stokes equation perturbed by a random right hand side. Let us take almost any initial data. Let us consider corresponding infinite trajectory from this random. Corresponding to this random initial data. Let us calculate Lyapunov exponent along this trajectory. Then there are two statements. First, Lyapunov exponent exists. Second, Lyapunov exponent is independent on the initial data you know. And this is result of application of multiplicative ergodic theory. Then there is a definition and question mark because this is, so to say, physical definition, and I have no right to suggest physical definition, that the flow described by equation 1 is turbulent if leading Lyapunov exponent is positive, and it is laminar if leading Lyapunov exponent is negative. At least it looks like a very, very natural definition. At least this is a good candidate for a rigorous mathematical definition. What does it mean, turbulence? Which flow is turbulent? So at least this is quite reasonable definition. And this, the well-posedness of this definition is a consequence of theorem 1 and the Kingman theorem. Well, just boundary case as usual, boundary case, just measure zero. Okay, then now look what we have. That the dynamical system 1 corresponds to Kick-Frost Navier-Stokes equation. Then there is a very easy statement number 1. Then when viscosity goes to infinity, then the leading Lyapunov exponent goes to minus infinity. So if you have high viscosity, then you have a laminar flow, obvious. But there is another statement, which is almost as obvious, but which is a problem. So if viscosity is small enough, then the leading Lyapunov exponent is positive. So actually I even don't know how difficult this statement is. But this is, as I said, there are a lot of open problems here. This is obviously true. There are no doubt that this is true. I don't know how to prove it, and I don't know how difficult this result is. Thanks. Just other way around. Right. Okay, so this is about so this is link to ergodic theory, which is just another manifestation that theorem 1 is a powerful result. But just sure. Yes.
All the statements are for one specific model.
Yes, yes, Walter, yes.
Or
yes, yes. And then I have one parameter in this problem, viscosity of the fluid. And then I start to decrease in viscosity. Then when viscosity is small enough, then if I keep the force fixed, of course I must arrive at just turbulence law. But this is amazing that even well-posedness of these notions, it follows from nothing. So there were no definition. What does it mean that this law is turbulent? This definition which looks unreasonable. So I did not check it with physicists yet. So just, but I don't think that people should object really, really, really strongly. So does it sound reasonable? Ah, okay, right. Okay, good. Yes, correct. Because there is another point here. Because apart from the fact that leading Lyapunov exponent is positive, there is another. How many positive Lyapunov exponents we have? And then... Yes. So then just maybe something like this. So if apart from this we know that let's say 10 Lyapunov exponents are positive, then maybe this is, it will be reasonable. Okay, then in this way, definition of turbulent flow will depend on the parameter. Because there is another problem, which is much more difficult, which is here. How to estimate, just to prove that when nu goes to zero, the number of positive Lyapunov exponents grows. And even another problem, because look, the fact that the notion of leading Lyapunov exponent is well defined and it is deterministic and not random. This is a proven theorem followed from Kinban stuff. But in this setting, I cannot prove that the number of positive Lyapunov exponent is a well defined object. I cannot, it follows from nothing. For finite dimensional system, people can do this. In this infinite dimensional framework, this is extra job which also was not done. So everybody is welcome. So for example, another beautiful open problem. Just to study characteristic of flow, which is how many Lyapunov exponents are positive. In finite dimensional system, this is well done. So this is essentially isolated ergodic theory implies that this is well defined notion. For some infinite dimensional system, Ruelle has some positive results. I simply had no time just to check if. Okay, I'm sure that just real theorem doesn't apply, but maybe his ideology applies here. I simply don't know. Real stuff, so he's for lower bounds. Sure that for infinite dimensional systems this is well defined object which is independent of initial data. For infinite dimensional system we have no isolated theorem. So, okay. So now just another section, which will be not long. This is about random attractors. So there is, for this class of object, people study random attractors. So now I shall show you that a random attractors is a so to say, part of this group of results. So random attractors can be embedded into this section of mathematical physics, which I'm speaking about. So this is our random dynamical system, which we derived from Navier-Stokes equation. Now let me stress that I have an underlying probability space. Then since the kicks eta minus one, eta naught, eta one is a stationary sequence of random variables in the space H, then there exists a measure preserving automorphism of my probability space omega, such that the kick number j can be obtained in the following way. I have to apply automorphism theta to j, and then I have to evaluate kick number naught. This is a usual way construct stationary sequences, and since I have here stationary sequence, I can just represent it in this way. And just again, this is true up to some equivalence which is hidden here, but this is fair. Okay. So now comes just very natural notation. For a fixed omega, let us denote by S T1 T2 omega flow map for equation 1, which sends u of T1 to u of T2. So I take initial condition at time t equal to 1. I solve my equation. I evaluate solution at time equal to 2. And this map applied to to the Yoshi channel. But I repeat, that this, I just fixed random parameter omega. It means that I'm doing this for a fixed right-hand side. So this is a flow map of non-autonomous Navier-Stokes equation, when I just fixed right-hand side. Okay. Now let mu be a stationary measure for my equation one. Then there exists one really beautiful, there is a very beautiful result which is essentially due to Ledrapierre, and it was later next it was very much developed by people who are doing random matrices. And this beautiful result is the following. Look, let us do the following. So this is a map. This is a map. And I have, this is a map on my phase space H. And I have a measure mu on this my phase space. I can consider a push forward of my measure mu under this map. Let us denote this. Okay. I can consider this push forward. Then the statement is then when t goes to infinity, this push forward converges to a limit. And this limit is a measure mu, which of course depends on omega because this map depends on omega. And then the Ledrapierre result is that this limiting measure exists when t goes to infinity, and just moreover, if I integrate this measure mu omega with respect to the measure which I have on my probability space, then I shall get back my measure mu. Of course, this is beautiful representation for the measure mu. Since this is representation is beautiful, then first it must have a name. It's very easy, and this is called Markov disintegration of the stationary measure mu. And apart from the fact that it must have a name, it does, it also has to be useful. And now let me show you that this is really, really useful. Okay, so this way of writing down the measure mu is an integral as an integral of the measure mu omega d omega is called Markov disintegration. Now let us consider support of the measure mu omega. Then it is easy to sense using smoothing property of Navier-Stokes equation. It is easy to check that this is a compact set. It's a compact set. That support of the measure mu omega is a compact for almost every choice of the random parameter. Okay. As before, let us denote in this way solution of equation one, which starts at u naught at t equal to zero. Then the following result is just another result of Armen Shirikyan and myself, and it's in function analysis, and this also can be found on my web page as usual. This is theorem two. Look, for any initial condition u naught, if I do the following, if I take my solution u, this one, and if I evaluate it at time t, then this is for any omega, this is a point in H. And if I evaluate distance from this point to this compact set, yes, that this distance is a random variable by definition. And the claim is that this random variable converges to zero in probability when t goes to infinity. First statement. And second statement, that the random compact set K omega is the minimal set such that property one holds for any initial data. But then property number one, which is here, property number one, this is exactly means that the random set K omega is the random point attractor for the convergence in probability. So in the business of random point attractors, they have many various definitions. So which kind of convergence is used? So here we are using convergence in probability, and how and which kind of, okay, so this is one of them, and this class of random attractors for convergence in probability is the smallest attractor which the people in the theory of random attractors consider. And so then there is nice result that Markov disintegration of invariant measures give us just exactly random point attractors. So if to push this point of view slightly to some extreme, that one can say that there are no random attractors, but there are properties of stationary measures. Well, and the business of random attractors, this is highly developed. So just many people were working on random attractors. So these are some names here. And just for example, due to the results we have from their papers, the following corollary: that if I take this set, random set K omega, then if I measure Hausdorff dimension of the set, that this Hausdorff dimension is bounded from above by some constant, which is deterministic constant, which is not random, but deterministic constants. Let me give you some remarks on this business of attractors, because it can be important. So first, our result, of course, obviously shows that the random attractor K omega, which is the pot of measurement omega, carries the natural measure, which is the measure which is due to Markov disintegration. So it means that the random attractors, which people in, for example, in the theory of randomly perturbed Navier-Stokes are being considered for something like 10 years already, these random attractors, they also carry natural measures, which these measures are natural for the objects which we consider. Second remark is the following, that the theorem about random attractors also holds true if we consider Navier-Stokes equation perturbed by a white force. And actually, I did not tell it yesterday, but our results on a white force perturbed Navier-Stokes equation remain true if the force has a constant component f of x. But just only one remark is that if f of x is non-zero, then all coefficient bs should be non-zero. So the noise can be white in time first, and the noise can have non-trivial, non-zero deterministic component. And this is exactly the frame in which people usually consider random attractors. But now let us make another step. Now let us put small parameter epsilon in front of this force. And let us look what happens. Look, this is now, I take Navier-Stokes equation, I apply to Navier-Stokes equation deterministic force of order 1, which is time independent, and I add a small noise of order epsilon. Then look, for epsilon equal to 0, this equation has an attractor, which people study now something like for 20 years, famous attractor for Navier-Stokes equation. But when epsilon is positive, this equation also has invariant measure mu sub index epsilon. Then, of course, there should be serious and deep relations between this measure mu epsilon, when epsilon becomes small, and the attractor K. And measure mu epsilon must be a tool to understand better attractor K. This is just another problem which we have here, just because we simply had no time just to work on it. For example, let me show you this. The following obvious result. This is just obvious, I say, just really very easy. If I consider delta neighborhood of this attractor K, and if I calculate measure mu epsilon of the delta neighborhood of attractor K, then this probability goes to zero when epsilon goes to zero. So this stationary measures here, so it's also probably the, and even if you have in Navier-Stokes equation, even if you have attractors like people study for 20 years by now, then just obviously, just due to physical nature of the problem, we always have a noise. So it seems that the pair stationary measured. To one, thanks. Yeah, so this is maybe. Now, just my time is up, so let me just tell you what the next slide is about, could be, which kind of results we also have. The last result which I thought, so to speak, about today, but I shall not. This is about the following: that let us take Navier-Stokes equation. We can force Navier-Stokes equation by kick forces, and also we can force Navier-Stokes equation by white force. Then let us do the following. Let us force Navier-Stokes equation by a kick force with short interval between kicks. Let the epsilon be interval between kicks. Then we have a stationary measure, which is kick, which is stationary measure for the kicked equation. This measure depends on epsilon. And also we have limiting object when we have a white force on the right hand side. And we also have here stationary measure. then the theorem, which then there are usual relations between the stationary measures. Stationary measure for the kicked equation converges to the stationary measure for the white force equation when period between kicks goes to zero. So once again, it shows that Wiener process and Gaussian measures, they possess some just universal properties, and then they very often are limit an object. So look what happens here. So we have this very nice commutative diagram. When I have solution for kick equation, then in distribution, solution of kick equation when time goes to infinity converges to a stationary measure. When epsilon goes to infinity, for any fixed time, solution for kicked equations converges to a solution of white force equation. It's essentially a consequence of Donsker's theorem. Then when time goes to infinity, then solution of white force equation converges in probability to corresponding stationary measure. And then the last theorem for this my second lecture is that kicked measure converges to white force measure when epsilon goes to infinity. So everything is commutative, everything is neat, and once again shows that Wiener processes are limiting objects which possess some limiting properties. And this is the end of the second lecture. Thank you very much. Yes. Just I am sure, and I just almost sure that actually I have a lot of similar estimated, but they are just for, I shall talk about them next lecture, but they are for the white force. I believe that we have similar relations for the kicked force equation. But random force of order one, why solution? I am really pumping energy, which any random force of order one should pump energy for the system. Okay, yes, the answer is yes. The answer is yes, we can, and just at some case. So this is, I shall just remember that we should write it down explicitly. So we shall write down another review of this, and we shall put it there. But yes, it is yes. It is not immediate. It is not immediate. It is not obvious. First, I spoke about Lyapunov exponents for the kick force equation, but absolutely the same applies for the white force equation. Absolutely the same, just it is slightly easier to speak in this context. So, and just I think that this is essentially the same. So in all situations which we checked in so far, the answers are the same for the kick force and for the white force equation. This is essentially the same object. Essentially the same. Answers are the same all the time. So this is. No, time between kicks today was one. If one can consider random time between kicks. The answer is yes, but we never did it. It is, life is complicated enough, even just without this. So okay, so when we started to consider this random kicked equation, our ideology was that we have to take the easiest possible model, which really possesses all all difficulties and all difficulties which we come across in the theory of Navier-Stokes equation. So and just so this is so maybe this is the friendliest and maybe the this is so just this is the good model, maybe one of the easiest, and since there are a lot of open questions even for this model, so then just maybe it is better just to move forward with this model rather than trying to put into game new models. And just very few people. So that's, I repeat, this is a very, very big problem, and just only very few people is there. So just everybody's welcome.
Anyone else welcome to I'm going to hold my questions off till the middle of next talk. Better. Thanks again. We'll see you tomorrow.